Maybe the chairs when you walk into a committee room and it's full and there's no.
Call meeting to order. The 18th meeting of the House CNRA Committee is called to order. There is quorum present. Today is Thursday, April 11, 1991 at 1:39 p.m. Note for the record, Representative Phillips, Representative Baker, Representative Mackey, Representative Sherry Davis, Representative Johnny Gonzalez are present. Also recognize Representative Johnny Ellis, who is also here with us. The purpose of today's meeting is to hear House Bill 223, Project Labor Agreements, sponsored by Representative Johnny Ellis. We are on teleconference. I apologize, I just turned on my mic. We are on record hearing 223, Project Labor Agreements. There's quorum present and Representative Ellis, if you want to come forward and present the bill. Also, anyone else that may be out there on teleconference that hasn't submitted their list of people wishing to testify, if you would submit it to the moderator, I'd appreciate it. So I just want to state that in discussing the bill with the sponsor, and certainly having been approached by people that are in favor of the bill and certainly against the bill, it's the purpose of this particular hearing today is to have an initial hearing of the bill. It's not my intention to move the bill today. I think that kind of in keeping with what our policy is of this committee is to hear all bills and then determine after we have an opening hearing and so forth to determine what action it will take next. So I don't want anybody to feel that the bill is either trying to be killed or trying to be rushed. It's simply going to be heard. So with that, Representative Ellis, I welcome you today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and ladies and gentlemen of the committee. I'm pleased to be before you today with this legislation. The purpose is very straightforward in that the bill affords state agencies the same opportunity the private sector now enjoys to enter into project labor agreements. So it's an optional bill to allow the state to make a decision in the future on capital, the way that capital projects will be managed and paid for. And just for those of you who aren't familiar with what a PLA is, let me just give you a definition. It's a contract between a labor organization or labor hiring hall and a public agency that may concern wages, working conditions, benefits, and other mutual obligations which has been negotiated in advance of letting the project out for bid. A contractor would know in advance what the labor costs will entail. While current law is silent with regard to state agency authority entering the project labor agreement, state agencies have successfully used these agreements in the past. And one of the reasons it would be good for this to be codified in statute is that there have been lawsuits brought in the past about this practice, the state using a project labor agreement when that's not officially sanctioned within the statute. On the Bradley Lake Hydro project, for example, an agreement was entered into between InSearch Corporation, the primary contractor, and organized labor, which helped bring the project toward completion some $40 million under budget. So we do have experience with this kind of agreement between a public entity, in this case the state, and a private contractor, and it was to our great advantage. In fact, we have the opportunity this year to discuss monies left over from that project, monies that we thought we would have to spend on Bradley Lake to be used for other public purposes. In another instance, a direct project labor agreement was entered into between a labor union and the Alaska State Housing Authority for an asbestos abatement project, and I could report the details of that, but that worked out quite well, too. So why should a state agency enter into a project labor agreement? The simple answer is for the same reason that the private sector utilizes them, for cost savings. As in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Project, Bradley Lake, as I mentioned, and many North Slope construction projects of significant magnitude, there can be cost savings realized from negotiating wages, working conditions, benefits, and other matters prior to the job going out to bid. And everyone would know what the ground rules would be, and then compete in putting those bids into the state. These and other cost savings can be bid out and reflected in the final cost of the project. And in addition, Mr. Chairman, to the obvious potential cost savings, any successful major project must be constructed within a stringent timeline. because when the estimate is made, you project the reasonable amount of time to complete the project, and to go beyond that is to incur additional costs in most cases. The project gets more expensive over time. So this timeline requires that a construction cadence, a term of art there, be followed in an uninterrupted manner. Any significant project needing a sizable labor force must be able to count on a reliable, skilled workforce to meet the construction cadence demands. So the bottom line being that disruptions in labor supply can and will cost millions in lost worker hours on large projects. Underscoring the potential for cost savings and stable construction cadence, project labor agreements can bring about Alaska local hire. And that's not the primary benefit here, but it's a side benefit, specifically provided for in federal labor law and supported by the U.S. Supreme Court and other court cases that can be cited. Local hire provisions found in all labor unions within Alaska allow local Alaska residents to be given preference for employment on Alaskan projects. And that's not just to say Alaskan residents, but actually through this mechanism, we could have a legally defensible way to hire people from a specific region, a specific village, for a construction project in that area. It would be in the state's interest and the state's ability to structure the project labor agreement in such a way that those would be the first people called in that village or that region where a project was being constructed, and then to Alaska. Through existing legally defensible things that have already been taken to court and upheld by the highest court in the land. It's also important to note that, and just, Mr. Chairman, to point out that other attempts at local hire have failed because of various reasons. This is a legally defensible mechanism for achieving that worthy goal. It's also important to note that while project labor agreements are between state agencies or local governments and labor unions, they do not preclude non-union residents from going to work on these projects. Equally important, anyone can and must be given access to employment on a PLA project if the state decided to go that route through the union's hiring hall, whether a union or non-union applicant. An Alaskan can, if desired, go through a union hall under a PLA, but not be required to join a union as a member. Those rules are very clear and long established. Under federal law, exclusive union membership is specifically prohibited and has sanctions for those requirements. Union and non-union applicants for employment on state-negotiated PLAs are to be given equal consideration. If a non-union Alaskan walks through the hiring hall door first, he or she will be given priority for dispatch. It's first come, first served under federal law. Passage of this legislation will provide state agencies with merely an option, with the opportunity to utilize PLAs that could result in cost savings, success in meeting construction deadlines, and help to ensure that Alaskans are hired for Alaskan public work projects. And in this era with the new administration considering significant work projects in the state of Alaska, significant construction projects, I think this kind of option, we would be wise to have this in place, to have it sanctioned in statute so that we don't incur future litigation, and that we have this tool to achieve savings and to put Alaskans to work. Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to answer any questions. There are folks that I can defer to here who are expert in the technical and legal matters before us. And once I've answered questions, I'd like to address some of the changes that I think the committee might want to consider making in the bill to avoid some of the concerns that witnesses may raise in later testimony. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Ellis. Do you intend to be here throughout the hearing?
I do.
If other questions come up, okay. Are there any questions at this point for Representative Ellis? Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, John, there's two fiscal notes attached in our packet. It looks like the combines about $1 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Baker, that is correct. That's what's here. And I think some of the changes that could be contemplated for the bill could reduce that significantly. There's, and if I could just touch on that for a moment, there was, or there is reference in the original bill before you to the Public Employees Relations Act. And there was some confusion there of whether this new statutory language should be directly associated with the para clause. And for confusion's sake, and maybe some of the concerns of the Department of Labor, that could easily be changed and not affect the substance of the bill and maybe clear up some of that confusion. There's also a provision in the original bill that relates to ongoing maintenance projects, and that was a large concern, I believe, at the Department of Labor's with the ability to administer this, and it seemed like it would be a an accounting bookkeeping nightmare to deal with that, and I have language or a proposed amendment or blank CS that if the committee, if it was the committee's desire, could address that concern. With one fell swoop on the maintenance item on page 2 of the bill, we could address the concerns of some of the labor organizations that deal with ongoing maintenance contracts with state and the state subdivisions, and also deal with some of the concern, or at least the major concern of which I'm aware of from the Department of Labor, and being able to oversee or administer something like that. It would be very difficult, and that really wasn't contemplated in the bill. It's language that got in there that has caused some problems and could easily be taken out. As how much of the rest of that fiscal note, how much of that could be eliminated, we'll have to get a proposal from the department to see how much those changes would wipe out of the fiscal impact.
Thank you, Representative Ellis. Any other questions? Okay, at this point, I do have lots of people on teleconference in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Silgotna. It appears those three locations, also people present here. What I'd like to do is just try to skip around a little bit and see where we're at the end of the time. It's my intention to try to get everybody. So if people that want to testify could try to be brief and not be redundant, then hopefully we'll cover everyone and everybody will have an opportunity to share their views on this particular bill. I'll take a couple here in person first, Cliff Berg, and then I'll go to someone on teleconference after that. If you could also, anyone else in the audience that hasn't signed in that would like to testify, if you do that on the sheet here on the clipboard, I'd appreciate it. Those members wishing to testify, if you would state your name and the company or who you're representing for the record, we appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Chairman Mackey and members of the committee. My name is Clifford Berg, and I live here in Jewell. I appreciate this opportunity to testify opposing passage of HB 223. I am president of Berg Construction Company, Incorporated, an Alaskan corporation formed here in Juneau in 1937 by my dad and myself. I have worked throughout southeast Alaska from Haines and Skagway in the north to Metlakatla in the south, and we have performed millions of dollars worth of contracts. When we first began in 1937, the construction unions were just becoming active in this area, and it was quite a scramble between the AFL and the CIO to sign up contractors. As I recall, we ended up with AFL carpenters and laborers and CIO teamsters. We did sign up with the unions then and have been signatory to labor agreements all these years and have been known as a union contractor. This doesn't imply that we've always seen eye to eye with various union demands, but generally we have maintained a good rapport with the union leaders. We have also been a member of the Alaska chapter of the Associated General Contractors of America since 1952. I would like to make the observation that about 15 years ago, there was only one open shop contractor in the Alaska AGC out of about 120 general contractor members. Presently, there are only a half a dozen members out of 70 who have assigned their bargaining rights. Because of this trend toward open shop contractors is probably the reason the unions are making this attempt to gain control of the entire construction industry. HB 223 is contrary to normal procedure for contracting with a state agency. No third party, and particularly any labor union, should ever have any authority as to how state money is spent. Allowing the union to decide which contractors may or may not be permitted to bid on state projects is discrimination. This may prevent some Alaskan contractors from bidding on projects unless they have been approved by the union. The union would require employees to belong to or join their union. This could place Alaskan workers who did not previously belong to the union at the bottom of the hiring list. Or if they belong to a union not signatory to this agreement, they would also be at the bottom of the hiring list. We are firm believers in a competitive bidding system in which the contracting agency awards a contract to the lowest responsible bidder to construct a project in accordance with the plans and specifications for a specified dollar amount. The contractor and the contractor only is the sole judge as to the competency of their personnel. Therefore, I urge you to vote against passage of HB 223. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Comments or questions from the committee? Okay, thank you for your testimony. If you would perhaps submit your testimony in writing that you have prepared there to one of my staff over here, we'd be happy to copy it and include it in the record. Next, we'll hear from Jan DeYoung, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, Jan.
Good afternoon, Chairman, representatives. My name is Jan Hart DeYoung. I am the hearing examiner for the Alaska Labor Relations Agency. This is the agency administering the Public Employment Relations Act within the Department of Labor. And I believe Representative Ellis was touching on some issues concerning the Alaska Labor Relations Agency and the Department of Labor under PARA. The act as it, bill as it's presently drafted, does place administrative responsibilities with the Alaska Labor Relations Agency and does provide that it apply its procedures and many of the provisions under the Public Employment Relations Act to the organization, administration, and implementation of these project labor agreements. Anticipating that PARA would apply and the agency would have responsibilities, we did offer a fiscal note from the Department of Labor that would provide for a hearing officer and a half-time support staff position to make up for any increases in the workload, which we would anticipate to be substantial if the agency were brought in. That fiscal note, however, would be revised downward if those responsibilities were decreased and naturally if they were removed entirely, very low. I don't know if the committee has any specific questions. I'm not sure what the intentions are with regard to PARA and these project labor agreements. But really, my focus here is on workload demands on this agency, if this agency is involved in these project labor agreements.
Does the Department of Labor have a position on this bill?
They have a position paper, which I believe you've been provided. If you have, it would have been late. I understood that it may have been sent over late yesterday. That position paper basically analyzes what this agency's role is under the present bill and anticipates workload and costs associated with that workload.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I don't have a copy of that.
Should be one that it does. It's not on department letterhead. It should say on the bottom position paper, Department of Labor. It's right under that cover of question. It's clipped in with numerous other ones. We'll stand at ease for a minute.
I didn't have a fiscal note even in hand. I just had a zero balance system.
Okay, so this case under 95, that's okay.
Did you have your file with you before you brought it over here?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I just got it.
Maybe that's why you didn't have it, because you had
okay.
You just got this.
It's confusing.
Okay, we're back on record. Dennis. Apologize for the numbers that didn't have it right there, but we do have them now. I guess, you know, not having an opportunity, having had a chance to...
Can I point out some highlights?
Analyze, yeah. I was going to ask you if you'd maybe just highlight it and basically the department's for it or against it or and why.
Well, let me just highlight what the position paper says. It points out the obligations of the agency. And as it currently, as the current bill provides, the Alaska Labor Relations Agency has enforcement authority, which means that a party that was not satisfied with a project labor agreement that was entered into could petition the Alaska Labor Relations Agency to enforce the agreement. And enforcement authority would include, a hearing officer, transcription expenses, travel expenses, all of the expenses associated with a full, fair, due process hearing. There would also be some expenses associated with, I believe, the process of negotiating those agreements under the existing bill, because it would provide that the Public Employment Relations Act's unfair labor practice requirements apply to the negotiations of those agreements. And basically what happens under PARA, if there is a ULP charge or an unfair labor practice charge, a party can come before the agency and petition them to consider an unfair bargaining tactics. And again, those charges are investigated and there is a full due process hearing conducted, with a hearing officer, a transcript is made, et cetera. And so there are substantial expenses associated with those hearing obligations. And those are the obligations under PARA that resulted in the fiscal note from the Department of Labor for the 1 1/2 positions and associated travel and contractual. If, of course, the agency did not have responsibilities to enforce or be involved in the implementation of these project labor agreements, the Department of Labor and this agency would not have expenses associated with the bill.
So basically, your fiscal note calls for about $130,000 a year for the Department of Labor to look into those kind of complaints as an enforcement agency. And it's not to be confused with the administration's fiscal note, who actually does the negotiating and is working in the contracts, which is about $780,000 a year for the administration to handle that. Is that correct?
That would be, yeah. The Department of Labor's role would be as the neutral enforcing agency.
So collectively, we're looking at a fiscal note, total fiscal note from between administration and labor of about $900,000. Johnny, is that?
That's what they've submitted, yes.
Okay. And I see a zero fiscal note from DEC. I don't know how they got a fiscal note in there, but it's in there. Any questions or comments for Jen? Our Department of Labor, I guess I should say. No? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, I would like to point out for the record, testimony and position papers of both for and against that are in our packets that I wanted to make sure were identified in the record. Was asked to submit testimony of Michael Breachin from Breachin Enterprises in Kodiak. His testimony, written testimony, is submitted to the record. Also, letters from John Tellinger, from Sutton, Jerry Brauman from Palmer. Some of these I might not be pronouncing their name correctly. They're just signatures. Bernard Newman from Palmer, Stephanie Cass from Wasilla, Chris Cass from Wasilla, Yolanda Butcher from Wasilla, Dale Butcher from Wasilla, Sonny Ute from Wasilla, Joy Eman from Palmer. Also, I would point out that Bob Ward, who represents AGC, has submitted a section-by-section analysis of House Bill 223, which was prepared by legal counsel representing AGC, and submitted by Bob. That's also in your packet. Also, a letter from the municipality of Anchorage, from James Rose, Employee Relations Director, and also letters from Newberry, Alaska Incorporated, from City Electric, from Incorporated, Electrical Contractors, Electric Inc., Skyline Electric Inc., and Ready Electric in Anchorage. I just wanted the record to reflect that those position papers are in the packets and available for committee members. This time I'd like to hear from Ernie Pauley from the State Chamber.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members of the committee, my statement will be very brief. After reviewing House Bill 223, and we listened with great interest to the testimony offered on the companion version of the Senate 95, and based upon that information, we find that the State Chamber must oppose adoption of HB 223. Our opposition to the measure is tinged with a measure of regret over the fact that this attempt to encourage local hire has major and unacceptable negative side effects. Our members in the State Chamber are composed of both union and non-union employers. In essence, as an organization, we cannot support a process which would discriminate or even tend to discriminate between and among legitimate Alaskan workers and contractors on the basis of whether or not there is a union affiliation. Of parallel concern to the organization is the rather illusory nature of the permissive language for the establishment of project labor agreements. Having some understanding of the politics of state and local government, there is no question in our mind that project labor agreements would soon and very quickly become an irrevocable and institutionalized segment of government operations, all in the name of promoting, quote, industrial harmony, unquote. We genuinely, and I want to stress that, appreciate the interests of the sponsors of House Bill 223 in fostering local hire. Unfortunately, 223 is not an approach that we can support.
Thank you, Mr. Pauley. Questions? Thank you. Helene Brooks? I believe after Ms. Brooks is done, that's all that I have on the list of people present to testify. If anyone else did come in late, you're free to sign in on the sheet if you'd like to testify. If not, we'll be going directly to people on teleconference. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Helene Brooks, and I represent the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 1547. I am an attorney, and I'm general counsel for the union. And I would like to speak on behalf of House Bill 223, which I perceive as a very elegant and simple piece of legislation that will accomplish a great deal of good at very little, if any, cost. I have to note that the onset, however, that I'm not sure I'm testifying on the same bill that the others have testified on thus far, because there is nothing in House Bill 223, for example, that would give any union the ability to control who can bid on a public construction project. And so with all due respect to Mr. Berg, I believe his name was, that is simply not correct. Neither is there anything in House Bill 223 which would in any way operate to discriminate on the basis of union membership. There's nothing in this bill that would disenfranchise or disadvantage a non-union member in securing work on a public construction project or give a union member any preference in securing work on a public construction project. Those are simply not accurate statements, and again, unless I'm at the wrong hearing, I believe that the gentleman was incorrect. Moreover, the well-phrased comments of the gentleman on behalf of the chamber are also not accurate. The attribute of this bill, that it is a piece of enabling legislation, is true. It is merely a piece of enabling legislation. There is nothing about this law that will result in the institutionalization of project labor agreements. It is a bill that, if passed into law, would provide the state of Alaska and local governments with an option, as Representative Ellis has said, that those government entities do not have. there is nothing in this piece of legislation that would compel the state or a local government ever to use it. So technically, this bill could be passed, and if the state or a municipality were never convinced it made sound fiscal sense or good public policy to implement it on any project, there's no reason to assume that a project labor agreement will become an institutionalized part of public government. I'm afraid that beneath those kinds of comments is a bias that is based upon the fact that this bill happens to reference labor organizations. And I think if we simply look at the language of the bill itself, that I hope you will agree with Representative Ellis that it does create a marvelous opportunity for the state. So let me, if I may, reflect upon some of the more exciting aspects of the bill. What the bill will operate to do is, if the state is entertaining the notion of providing funds for the construction of a dam or a hydroelectric facility or to build a road, currently the state would simply let the project out to bid and award the bid to the lowest bidder. If passed, this piece of legislation would enable the state to simply discuss with a group of labor organizations what those labor organizations might be willing to offer in terms of concessions for the purpose of securing the right to put their members to work on the project. The state would enter into negotiations with a group of labor unions. If the state, as a result of those negotiations, were not convinced that it made any sense to execute what's called a project labor agreement, there's nothing about the bill that would compel the execution of an agreement. The state could simply terminate the talks, and the project would be let to bid in accordance with the rules as they currently exist. If in the process of these talks the state were convinced that it made good sense to execute an agreement that would cover all phases of the project, that would ensure that local labor were put to work and that public funds went into the hands and the pockets of Alaskans, and that local expertise were readily available, and that work interruptions could be avoided, all of the things that Representative Ellis mentioned. If the state were convinced that the project at issue warranted that kind of approach, the state would enter into such a project labor agreement. The project labor agreement would be nothing more than a document that would set minimum standards that contractors would have to incorporate into their bid. But any contractor at all could then submit a bid simply assuring compliance with the state's prerequisites. You need to be mindful of the fact that these would not be the union's prerequisites. No union would have the right to decide what these standards would be. These would be standards that the state would set and receive the agreements of the unions to comply with. The competitive bidding process would proceed as it ordinarily does. There would be no change to the competitive bidding process, and the contractor with the low bid would be awarded the job. The only difference is that the state, not the unions, would have had a hand in setting the standards. So for example, if the state decided that it wished to see all contractors bidding utilize a union's hiring hall, that could be incorporated into the project labor agreement. Now, some people say, well, my God, that creates a picture of horror, because if you use a union hiring hall, that means that non-union workers will not be able to go to work. Well, that's not correct. Several years ago, the United States Supreme Court issued a decision that prohibited labor organizations from discriminating in the offering of their services between non-union and union members. So it is simply now a function of law that a union individual or a non-union individual who would come to the IBEW, for example, to sign its hiring hall must be afforded the same right to sign, a non-union member must be afforded the same right to sign as a union member. I'm not saying that's necessarily a source of great delight to a lot of labor organizations these days, but it happens to be the law. So if passed, there would be no discrimination on the basis of union membership. That's not accurate. That's an attempt to scare people out of thinking cogently and fairly about this piece of legislation. What is a fact is that in the 1950s, Congress passed a provision that's incorporated in the National Labor Relations Act, which specifically and expressly enables a labor organization to distinguish in the offering of its services based upon area residency. And so when Representative Ellis mentions that a union, using a union hiring hall will have the effect of ensuring local hire, that is an accurate statement. So if passed, this bill will ensure local hire on those projects where a project labor agreement has been utilized. I would like to note in closing, and I realize I'm taking a great deal of time, is that I have some difficulties with the fiscal notes as well that have been attached to this. And I think I would like to note that I expect the references to para to be deleted. There's been some concern about those, and I think a realization has been reached that there would be very little need for there to be that kind of administrative oversight. Any fiscal note that assumes the project labor agreement will be used is inaccurate, and so it's unfair to attach a fiscal note based upon the assumption that a project labor agreement will be utilized on every state project. So in closing, this is merely the creation of an option, which on one hand should ensure for the state, if utilized, that money is saved, and should ensure for the state, if a project labor agreement is utilized, that Alaskans, for a change, will be put to work when Alaskan funds are spent. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Phillips.
Helene, I do have a question. How would you plan or be able to maintain your labor organization dues structure and your hiring preferences on a project by the union between union and non-union employees?
By law, the union is entitled to charge a non-union member a handling fee equal to the same amount charged a union member minus the portion that simply goes toward union dues. The bookkeeping systems in this respect are already established. So if someone were to come in and want to sign up, they would be charged the fees that apply to someone who declined membership.
Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, first, for those of you that may not be aware, I want to assure this committee that Helene is as articulate in defense of her position as many times that she sat on the other side of the table in the past. So this is one articulate lady that when she presents her testimony, you can ensure that it's well thought out. And at the risk of debating the Anchorage Municipal Charter, we do have a...
It seems like good old days, right?
But I think it's appropriate, Helene, that at least you have the opportunity to comment. A person from the Employee Relations Department, who I'm certain that you know well, sent us a letter, and it says, this bill conflicts with the philosophy embodied in Article 2, Section 2 of the Charter.
I have not seen it, but...
Well, I'll just read the rest of it. I was just recalling, wait, I thought that you probably had to memorize chapter and verse, so I thought that maybe at least you should have the opportunity to comment because it is in the record.
No, I have it in front of me now, and no, it won't take much time.
Go ahead and read it. Any other questions?
Do you want to comment on it?
I would love to.
Okay. I would like to move on because we do have a lot of other people that would like to testify, but if you could respond to Representative Baker, then we'll move on.
Thank you. Thank you for the compliment. I hope I live up to it. This position paper is incorrect. It talks in terms of language that suggests an antitrust violation, that there would be a restraint of trade. And my quick comment to that is apparently the writer is unaware of the statutory exemption from the antitrust clause that applies to state action. Apparently the writer is also unaware of a recent Supreme Court decision to that effect issued about 8 or 9 days ago, enlarging the antitrust exemption as it applies to actions of governmental entities, particularly the state. The writer is also unaware of the state's ability to exempt its own actions from antitrust prohibitions, which the bill does. You notice there is a reference exempting it from the antitrust prohibitions and the competitive bidding statutes. And in closing, the writer is apparently unaware of the fact that in a recent district court decision in the state of Alaska, Judge Kleinfeld rejected precisely that allegation when raised by the AGC, the ABC, and two contractors, non-union, one of which is from Mississippi. So that legal argument has been put on the table, and it didn't sell to the Supreme Court or the district court.
To the members of my committee, you can see why that I took the opportunity to, for 6 years, I had this opportunity.
So you wanted us to have
it? I wanted you to share the same.
I would like to have that copy.
Oh, is this yours?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I just referenced it to Representative Ellis. So. However, just for the record, thank you. We do have opinions from attorneys on both sides, and they're obviously opposing opinions, and which is quite common when you're dealing with attorneys. But I have a tendency to want to consult my own attorney in this case. So, if you, Ms. Brooks, if you would submit an analysis, your legal analysis of why the previous speakers were incorrect, or why the attorneys on the other side are incorrect. Be happy to have my attorney, which is Ledge Counsel, take a look at it and maybe advise us in the future.
I'd be delighted.
Thank you. Okay, at this time, I'd like to go to Anchorage to, we'll take Gene Kulowick from AGC. Are you online, sir?
Yes, I am, Chairman. Okay.
Mr. Kulowick, before you get started, I would like to ask members who are testifying on teleconference to try to limit your testimony somewhat. I would like to try to get everybody in if we can, but certainly take the time that you need.
Yes, I'd like to speak on this issue. I'd like to state my opposition to this legislation. This legislation reduces competition, discriminates against viable Alaskan contracting organizations, and discriminates against Alaskan workers. The bill has really not much to do with Alaska Hire trying to force a union job. You do not see any reason to change the status quo. We have viable contractors this time. Who will be impacted adversely. They have their contracting organizations, employees, and structure, and they're able to compete successfully. I think they should be able to allow to continue as they have been until this time. It's interesting to note the amount of money in the neighborhood of $900,000 to $1 million be required to implement this bill. I see very little reason, or see no reason, to spend $1 million implementing some legislation that is not required.
Okay, thank you, sir. Any questions from the committee? I'll take another person in Anchorage, Richard Katna.
Katnaw,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Richard Katnaw. I'm vice president of Unit Company, an Anchorage-based contractor. We've been in business since 1977. We are a union contractor, and we hire almost exclusively, as a matter of fact, we do hire exclusively Alaskan. I'd like to point out some concerns that our firm has with this bill, and I would like to refer the committee's attention to Section 2B3 of the bill, and I'd like to read that just so there's no misunderstanding, because what it's saying is that the project labor agreement may require the state or a political subdivision of the state, or one or more labor organizations representing employees in the building, maintenance, construction industry to enter into an agreement concerning labor relations on a public construction project, to cease or refrain, or agree to cease or refrain from handling, using, selling, transporting, or doing business with a contractor, subcontractor, or other person. In essence, this provision might allow an innocent party to be blackballed from bidding on work subject to a project labor agreement. This provision should either be eliminated or the conditions for implementation clearly set forth. We see nothing in this bill that sets forth a need for such a provision. I would also like to direct the committee's attention to Section 2C of the bill, whereby it says that the political entity shall retain substantial control of the means, manner, and standards of performance of all employees on the job. This requirement represents a monumental change in the traditional relationship between the owner and the contractor. The contractor is traditionally responsible for the means, manner, and standards of performance necessary to prosecute the work in a timely, efficient manner. Historically, the intrusion of the owner into this area of the contractor's responsibility has led to construction claims that the intrusion negatively impacts the contractor in any manner. Such claims are almost always successful, and responsibilities of the parties are so clearly established by both tradition and law that owner's representatives clearly avoid any attempt to direct the work of the contractor. This provision likewise should be eliminated, or the political entities attempting to use this authority will most likely be forced to defend their actions in court. And it seems to me that as I hear about this bill being just a simple, pure bill, I think I should call attention to the February 1991 IBEW newsletter, which says, and this is a direct quote, "This particular piece of legislation is, without a doubt, the single most important bill before the legislature from labor's construction industry affiliates perspective, and if passed, could truly change the fate of people working in Alaska's construction industry forever. The beauty of the bill is that it promises to secure for Alaska a legal means to ensure local hire. A local hire could be predominantly labor or union for sure, but with the passage of this bill, the state would have granted itself authority to enter into collective bargaining agreements with unions, which could require all contractors to secure their employees exclusively through union hiring law. That wasn't something that we dreamed up. Hire require all contractors to secure their employees exclusively through a union hiring law. That, ladies and gentlemen, seems to be the essence of this bill. We do not
of what he was just referring to. I didn't get an opportunity to take all the notes I would like to have.
Be happy to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Katnaw. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Katnaw, in addition to that report, I would also like a copy of your written statement, please.
I'd be happy to provide a written statement to the committee.
Okay, thank you. This time we're going to move to, there are more people in Anchorage I'll come back to you, but I'd like to go to Fairbanks first, to Albert Bell.
Hello, thank you for the opportunity to get some testimony here. My name is Bert Bell, and I'm the president of GEM Company, a union contractor, general construction here in Fairbanks. We've been in business since the 1950s, and have done, you know, well over $150 million work in that time. An awful lot of that's been for the state of Alaska. We oppose this bill. In my own thinking, I can hardly believe it's being considered. The state has no business whatsoever trying to bargain for private enterprise. The non-union labor force helps keep labor competitive. Labor rates. If we let the state require that we go to, or the municipalities require that we go to a labor union, there's nothing to keep the rates down. The people bargaining for the state have no personal economic interest in the outcome of the agreement, whereas contractors out there bargaining their own agreements do. That sort of thing. When you have an uninterested party like that, you're going to give away things that shouldn't be given away. The current trade agreements cover a lot more than just wages. There are very many benefits and agreements and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rates. are included in our in the union pack, and it's not something that the state would be qualified to even try to bargain for. The state would become responsible to the contractor for providing a good labor force with the proper skills, and on a very large project, I think we saw it during the pipeline, that became very difficult to do. I think we saw an awful lot of the unions go to non-local people and bring them up from Texas, up from Oklahoma. This is no guarantee of a local labor hire whatsoever. The unions, that's only hype. Ms. Brooks, as she was speaking, said that it would not keep non-union contractors from bidding these projects. I would like to submit here that the IBEW right now pays union contractors before they, or promises to pay before they bid a job, a certain amount of money that they can credit toward that project. For instance, yesterday, a project here in Fairbanks on a school bid, the IBEW to the union contractors offered $32,000. That's roughly 5% of the low electrical contractor. The non-union contractors did not get that benefit. There are ways and means that they can keep this thing union. The union hands, if they work for a non-union company, will be fined by the union. Now, this is going to cause then the union hands, once they sign, to not be able to work for a non-union company. This is definitely discriminatory toward non-union companies. I'll close off now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Any questions from the committee? They also in Fairbanks have a Bill Fuller.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bill Fuller, and I've been in and around the construction industry in Fairbanks here for some 30 years, working with both union and non-union contractors. I first would like to agree with the person from Anchorage when he talked about the Section 3 in the bill, which allows an agreement to be made to refrain from dealing with certain persons. I also would like to agree with the section about substantial control of the labor on the job site being handled by the state or the governmental body. It's wrong, I believe, for the governmental entity and the union to make an agreement which requires that a contractor work according to their notions and then expect a competitive bid. A couple of other things that in the bill itself that bothered me in like it's section 2B1, the agreement may require the state or political subdivision to require contractor, subcontractor, other person on the project to accept referrals of qualified applicants from the labor organizations for project employment. This means the agreement could require that the only hiring could be done through. When that happens, we know who gets the jobs. And one last section that bothers me quite a bit, it says this agreement must include a grievance procedure with binding arbitration as its final step. And many people are philosophically set against binding arbitration. I think that would be a very, very difficult one to get people to agree with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Questions from committee? Okay, this time I'd like to go to Soldotna. Harold Jackson.
Yes, Harold Jackson Construction. Been Soldotna about 25 or 30 years in the construction.
Excuse me, Mr. Jackson? Mr. Jackson, I understand that you are opposed to the bill. You're a contractor in Soldotna. We did have a little bit of trouble hearing you, was that correct that I understood you to just be opposed for a lot of the same reasons you heard other people speak in opposition? Is that correct?
They're correct.
Okay, we'll take another speaker from Soldotna. Representative Phillips.
Harold, thanks very much for being here to testify today, and I'd appreciate if you'd send me a letter, please, on your position. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. I was going to say that the other people in Soldotna, perhaps if you could speak directly into the mic, maybe we'll be able to hear you just a little better. We'll go to Stephen Foster at this time.
Hi. My name's Steve Foster. Address, Box 303, Soldotna. Partner in Foster Construction. We bid on public work projects. I'm opposed to this legislation for a lot of the same reasons that I've heard other contractors state. And I don't believe it's the best interest of the state to get in between labor and contractors. I don't think that there's going to be any benefit to the people of the state by doing that. And I'd just like to voice my opposition to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Foster. Any questions? We'll take one more from Soldotna. Marcia Ward.
Thank you. I'm Marcia Ward. Post Office Box 290, Soldotna, and I'm representing my family firm of Ford Landscaping Service. We've worked both with union and non-union contractors and subcontractors throughout the state and have done it with very little problem, no labor difficulties whatsoever. I cannot imagine that the state of Alaska feels that they can come on a job and tell me whether or not my employees are working satisfactorily for me. If this law goes into existence and as innocuous as the lady representing the electrical contractors or electrical union seems to want to make us think it is, I find that really hard to swallow. There is no way that the state of Alaska should get involved in this type of business. All it's doing is creating more bureaucracy, more expense. The paperwork for a small contractor like us now is in the office all the time, and we're a small contracting firm. All we're doing here is creating more bureaucracy and more problems for Alaskan contractors. We've always hired locally. We've done our best to comply with all of the state's laws to date, and I very strongly am opposed to this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Marcia, for being there. Would your analysis of the bill be the same as it would apply to the borough as to the state?
Most definitely, Gail. Any of these public works projects, they all are under the same mandate with the Davis-Bacon wages, and we are willing to comply with that. We already go into these bids on equal footing as far as pay scale and so forth, so most definitely. And if you want to add incentives, as the borough does, to hire Alaskan, then do it where the contractors are most willing to pay attention, and that is offer some incentives if some people need this to hire locally. The borough does this now, and you know, if the state wants to make sure that we hire in-state, then do the same thing. Put some money back into our pockets. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia.
I'd like to go back to Anchorage. at this time and go to William Schneider.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Bill Schneider. I am the general manager of Anchorage Sand and Gravel, a union employer based here in Anchorage since the early 1930s. Like many of the other speakers before you here this afternoon, we strongly oppose this piece of legislation. I should tell you that prior to my working at Anchorage Sand and Gravel is that I was with the Associated General Contractors for about 8 years. And during that time, I was able to witness both the good times and the bad times for the Alaska construction industry. Of course, what took place in the early part of the 80s is the work was booming. Labor agreements reflected that boom with healthy wage and benefit increases and more restrictive work rules. Of course, when things started to unravel in 1986, management and labor were forced to go back to the collective bargaining process and negotiate some more competitive labor agreements. I should tell you that that is not an easy process. So it's difficult to give back those things that you worked hard for. But both management and labor recognizes that to be competitive, that was needed to take place. Well, as that was taking place, of course, a lot of the unions found it necessary to either take wage cuts or wage freezes, and many of them did so and took it back and sold it to their membership. Other unions, on the other hand, did not want to take this process back to or take the more competitive wage agreements back to their membership, and so they started looking at alternative ways around the collective bargaining process. One of the examples that, of course, that we've seen in the state in the last several years are the union-only utility agreements, where utilities will only hire union contractors. And bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, is we are a union employer, and we're happy in our relationship with our unions that we work with. But we also, I think, are realistic enough to know that the competitive marketplace is a place where these things should take place and not through legislation. So when you hear things like this bill is being wrapped in about local hire, I suggest when you hear the word local hire in reference to a proposed piece of legislation, if you think of Jimmy Swaggart, it may sound good, but is it really? I don't really think that what you're looking at here will promote local hire any better than a strong economy would. Strong economies is what promote local hire and not project labor agreements. The other things that we would mention just briefly is, of course, is what this would do is as was eloquently presented by previous speakers, it was a raised cost. This is not a market-sensitive process like the collective bargaining agreement is. It circumvents the process. This is really a bad piece of legislation, and I urge your no vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider. We'll questions? Okay, we'll go to Bill Reeves, also in Anchorage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Reeves. I'm an attorney with Hensley, Herring & Wright, and I'm counsel to the Associated General Contractors, which, as you know, is a trade association representing the construction industry. I'd like to take a couple of minutes just to comment on some of the presentation by Representative Ellis and some of the comments that were made earlier. To dispel a couple of the, I guess what I would characterize as confusing statements earlier, the Bradley Lake project was not a project agreement that was negotiated between the state and labor union. Bradley Lake project agreement was negotiated between a contractor, that would be NSERCH, and various labor unions. There's nothing that would prohibit in the future similar project agreements from being negotiated between contractors and the labor union. The competitive environment that would exist for negotiating those types of collective bargaining would be much more conducive to benefits being obtained in the bargaining process, as the bids in Bradley Lake demonstrated, and the fact that it came in under budget. Another reference that was made was to an asbestos abatement project. And my understanding of that project was that it was a direct hire, not a project labor agreement, it's a union project. provided labor directly to the municipality involved. This bill would not affect that type of scenario at all. Finally, reference to the North Slope and other private agreements. You should be aware that the owners of the North Slope, primarily the oil companies, do let projects, either union or non-union. When they characterize a project as being let union, that is done under a project labor agreement that is negotiated between the North Slope Contractors Association. It is not a project agreement that has been negotiated by the oil companies themselves. In essence, I guess, there is, to my knowledge, few, if any, project agreements that exist in the state of Alaska between owners and unions. So the need to do something and mimic the private sector is not doing that at the present time. I'd also like to comment briefly on the list system that exists within most unions today. This bill is being represented as being non-discriminatory against non-union workers. Most unions, however, have a list system for dispatching workers. And that list system has anywhere from 2 to 6 lists usually. And within those lists, you gain priority based upon the number of hours you have usually worked for an employer who is previously signatory to that agreement. So in other words, you may be a non-union worker and you're entitled to be dispatched, but you are on a much lower list and you are not going to get a job until all of the previous union workers have been dispatched. So there is a discrimination that is going to occur within this system, and I suggest that you get copies of all of the existing labor agreements if you want to see how that list system might work. Additionally, you should be aware that all of those labor agreements require contributions to various union trust funds. These contributions are not small by any means. Most of them will vary between $6 and $9 per hour. The health and welfare contributions require a certain minimum number of hours before the worker who is paying into those trust funds would be able to benefit from those contributions. And similarly, the some $4 or more per hour that would be going into the pension trust fund for that worker requires certain vesting requirements. At the present time, most unions have a 10-year vesting requirement. So a worker, non-union worker, Alaskan resident, who might be fortunate enough to wait long enough and get on a job, go out and work for several months, unless he sticks around and manages to work for 10 years, he's going to be paying $4 or $5 an hour out of his pocket that he's never going to see. I don't think that this type of agreement would necessarily benefit those Alaskans, would not see those benefits. I do have some comments with respect to PARA. If PARA is removed, some of those would be alleviated. But as it presently stands, incorporating the unfair labor practice provisions contained in PARA make the bill quite confusing. Confusing to the extent that it's questionable whether the duty to bargain is optional or not. By incorporating 2340.110, the requirement that the state bargain in good faith could be construed to require in a state to bargain with a labor organization. I think the reference to PARA should be removed. But one thing to keep in mind, if PARA is removed, who is going to fulfill the role in the bill that PARA presently fills? Some organization or entity will. Those costs that are in fiscal note by PARA will be borne by someone, whether it be the Alaska courts, it's the court that would be the third party neutral, or any other organization that would be the third party neutral. In short, I think that the bill represents very poor public policy. There's not a demonstrated need for it. There's been no labor unrest in the past. There's no indication that the state will be, or any political subdivision of the state will be, any better negotiator with the fact is that contractors on public construction projects go into the bidding process on equal grounds with respect to labor rates at the present time. The Davis-Bacon Act applies to all agreements, which is in Title 36 of the Alaska Statutes, Little Davis-Bacon Act. And as a result, the only thing that these project labor agreements can do is either raise that wage rate and affect the terms and conditions of that working.
Mr. Reeves?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you to wrap it up, please. I've got other people yet, and I'd like to give the representative some closing comments, and we're just about out of time because resources needs this room. So if you'd do that, I'd appreciate it.
Consider it wrapped up.
Well, I didn't mean to cut you off if you have anything else to add, but I just wanted to remind you we're almost out of time.
Very good.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your indulgence. So I have a few other people. However, I'd like to call on Joe Thomas, who is here in person, and allow him just a couple minutes, Joe, if you could, and
sure.
I'll try to pick up. I've got one more person in Anchorage and two more folks in Philadelphia that I'd like to get also.
Turn both of these on or just?
Either one.
Okay. Yes, my name is Joe Thomas. I'm the business manager of the Laborers Union in Fairbanks. And I'd just like to make a couple of brief comments. I did not prepare any testimony, but other than sitting here in the room, I think we're missing the point here. I think the purpose of this bill is exactly like some people had stated previously. It's purely an attempt to make some sense of the hiring in the state of Alaska. Local hire, and I'm not Jimmy Swaggart, so excuse me for that. But I'd like to just say that my experience with project labor agreements has been nothing but good. It has ensured the hiring of people on the North Slope in the past. It ensured the hiring of Alaskans in the state of Alaska on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Project, which was signed with the owner companies at that time, as well as the two earlier North Slope agreements, which were signed with BP and ARCO. Ensured Alaskan hire through the hiring halls. You're all aware, I'm sure, of the problem with resident hire. Yeah, legal opinion is that basically these types of things would make it legal. You're making an agreement with somebody that already has a resident hire, and unions are allowed to do that by federal law. We have out-of-state contractors, Canadian contractors working on the road in Tok Junction area, importing Canadians we cannot cross the border and work in Canada. As you said, we'll make it brief. The point is, these are the only way that people have found that you can legally hire Alaskans and make, in some cases, the discrimination against those from outside the state of Alaska. This is the purpose for it, and I think that the past history of project labor agreements will prove that out. People will just take the time and go back and review them. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Okay, I'd like to, I got John Powell in Anchorage. John, if you could be brief, and we'll start wrapping it up here.
I will be. My name is John Powell. I'm Assistant General Manager of SKWS Mills, Inc. We are a subsidiary of the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. We are a contractor primarily doing work in rural Alaska. What I'd like to do is paraphrase a letter that we sent to Senator Pierce regarding Senate Bill 95 as to how this legislation affects rural contract work. This bill appears to equate union hire with local hire. In our opinion, nothing could be further from the truth. If this bill passes, our shareholders and local residents of communities that we work in would be forced to join a union they don't need in order to work on local village projects. In fact, Mr. Ellis earlier pointed out that non-union local residents would have to get to the union hall first, be first on the list to work on a local project. There's already a list at the union halls, as has already been pointed out. It is impractical also for a person, say from Barrow, to fly to Fairbanks to get on a union list for a federal local project. As a consequence, it would prohibit hiring and or training opportunities for our shareholders and local residents who would not have the necessary experience, but but who could be offered training through employment on local projects. In addition, a small village project could be hampered by the jurisdictional difficulties associated with union work and would greatly add to the cost of public projects. By allowing public agencies to enter into project agreements with labor organizations, which may become binding on contractors and subcontractors, it essentially subverts our bargaining rights and will have a very negative impact on the competitive construction business. We do not lend our support to this legislation. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Powell, could you state who you work for again or who you're representing?
I work for SKW Eskimos Incorporated.
Thank you. Okay, I'd like to, again, ask you to be brief. In Soldotna, Mr. Joyce, Bill Joyce, and Ron Davis will follow.
Yes, hello. My name is Bill Joyce. I'm a partner at Architect Services in Kenai. My address, P.O. Box 1594, Soldotna. I feel that this is not good legislation. Not only is this a special interest bill, it will also add to the cost, in my opinion, of the construction projects under the public works contracts. This will also place an added burden on the taxpayer. This bill also allows for the discrimination of the non-union Alaskan worker. Therefore, I ask this committee not to endorse this House bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Joyce. Ron Davis.
Yes, I'm Ron Davis with Alaska Road Builders. Box 44990 Ridgeway Road, Soldotna. And I oppose this legislation also. I've heard a lot of comments, and most of them have been opposed to it, except for a few, and they seem to be with the union organizations. I've worked with both union and non-union organizations in the area throughout the state here for 25 years, and I just don't see where this is going to gain us anything but a lot of headaches. You got attorneys that have been testifying here, and they can't even agree on what this really means, and I don't think that it's going to help us at all. I think it's going to be detrimental, very, very detrimental. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Davis, thank you. And again, I appreciate the indulgence of all of the people testifying and being brief. I know that there's probably a lot more that you could have added. However, we are out of time. I would like to, we have about 5 minutes left, and I'd like to ask Representative Ellis if he would like to basically sum up your feelings about the comments on both sides of the issue, and perhaps if you have any you had mentioned you might have some changes to offer,
sure.
Or just your general feelings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the folks that have come out today to express their opinion. I think there's a great deal of confusion on a number of people's parts about what the bill is and what it isn't and what it does and what it doesn't. And I get a sense that there's a great deal of emotion from leftover labor negotiations, all kinds of things boiling here on the labor and the management side, things that I'm not interested in getting involved with, but it seems like everyone's bringing their own particular biases to the table, and that's affecting this. That's very natural, and I understand that. I would hope we would concentrate on the bill as it is. And a lot of the comments were good and stirred some thought with me about some ways to improve this legislation, and I would hope to have the chance to circulate some of those ideas that were mentioned when Jan DeYoung was up here about the fiscal notes and the responsibility of the State Department of Labor, circulate some of those ideas and some of the ones that I thought of during the meeting to huddle with the committee at a future time and try and bring some changes to the bill forward. So I'd appreciate that opportunity, Mr. Chairman. Just in summary, I'd say let's forget what's in the union's interest, a labor organization's interest. I'm not particularly concerned about that. Let's forget about what's in the contractor's interest or their profit margin or their management prerogatives and figure out what's the state's interest, the public's interest here. Local hire is a particular concern of mine. Saving money on the part of the state when we build these public construction projects is a concern of mine. And I view those as the state's interest. But maybe at the next time we get together on this, we'll have some new ideas, proposals for changes in the bill to make it do what it's intended to do and not cause some of the problems that some people fear. That I'm in some of the cases, I'm not sure if they do or not. And I'd like to fix those and avoid any of the problems that are not, you know, things that are unintended that might be consequences of this, and figure out what the state's best interest is and try and move forward with what meets that rather than any special interest.
Okay, thank you, Representative Ellis. As I pointed out earlier, I'm going to hold the bill. I intend to give it a further hearing. I'm going to ask our legislative council to analyze the analysis that have been done by the union's attorney and by AGC's attorney, and bring us back an independent opinion. And I intend to give the bill a fair hearing. I don't intend to, you know, to heal the bill or move the bill in a rush mode. I think that it needs more work and it needs more input, and so we will be scheduling it once that's available. Representative Phillips.
Before we quit, and while Representative Ellis is still here, I do have one question of you that maybe we could bring back the answer in the next meeting. I'm curious as to why all the letters of support are only from electrical contractors or electrical companies. And no other construction, in the portion of the construction industry. And I'd like some clarification on
sure.
that.
Through the chair, Representative Phillips, I have no idea why that is. The public record, of course, is open to anyone who cares to comment. And I can't answer your question as to why just electrical contractors responded in favor of the bill.
Maybe somebody has an answer somewhere along the line.
Sure, I'll try and find out and let you know.
Thank you.
Okay, then with that, thank you, Representative Ellis.
Thank you.
And everybody that took the time to participate in today's hearing. Next meeting of House CNRA will be Wednesday, April 17 at 1:30 p.m. We'll hear House Bills 256 and 222. And then again on Thursday, April 18, House Bill 232 and House Bill 193. If there's nothing further, we'll stand in adjournment.
Gail, you want the answer?
Yeah.
Because Associate General Contractor, she got through her mailing list and the National Electrical Contractor Association. Because both of them went out and solicited letters.
But
there
are other
people
who might be interested.
No, you know, I'm talking about Contractor Association. And that's all you have. I mean, but Gail, what happened is.